we're not therapy. We're not going in and asking people to delve into their psyches. But the process itself, it's very interesting that people often find it very therapeutic, because we're creating a space where people are welcome to share whatever they feel comfortable sharing, but also where we're really, what we're really, really encouraging people to do is to create a safe space for their creativity, for their sense of what is really possible, what they would really like, for their dream of what really could be. And that is an incredibly healing and transformative process.
Humanity is in trouble. Some of us are here to help. Together, we will take the next step.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Next Step Podcast. This is Episode 3, The Dynamic Helpers, and I am your host, Jared Sanchez. All right, I'm going to be keeping my comments lean on this episode. Most of the time will be spent in the interview portion. There are two main focuses with the Next Step Podcast, and those being sustainable living practices and social process technologies. The first two episodes I've dealt pretty much exclusively with sustainable living practices, the Transition Town work, and the PermaBlitz network. I'm happy to switch gears for this episode and get into something that gets me really excited, and that's the social process technology side of things. These are ways for groups of diverse people to get together and create solutions, create choices, solve problems, get to the bottom of real issues in a manner that's just unseen before in our public experience, our public life. My guest is Rosa Zubizarreta, and she works with Jim Ruff and Associates, spreading the dynamic facilitation methodology to businesses and, you know, townsfolk and whoever will have them all across the country and I believe even the world. Rosa Zubizarreta helped write the book The Tao of Democracy with Tom Attlee. And I'm not exactly sure the extent to which she helped with that book project, but she is mentioned right there on the title page with Rosa Zubizarreta. And so it's very clear that she had a big part in this wonderful book that I've ranted and raved to you all about before, and I still will, The Tao of Democracy. So I think it's only appropriate that I read a small excerpt from The Tao of Democracy talking about dynamic facilitation, and that will be the segue into the interview with Rosa Zubizarreta. So here we go. Dynamic facilitation and the choice-creating process. To facilitate means to help make easier. If the goal in a conversation is to have meaningful and powerful dialogue, then the role of a facilitator is to help make it easier for the group to do that. Dynamic facilitation, created by consultant Jim Ruff, is a leading-edge process designed to help groups have meaningful conversations, access their creativity, and discover practical breakthroughs to challenging situations, even in the midst of divergent opinions, strong emotions, and conflicting beliefs. This style of facilitation produces a highly co-creative form of dialogue called the choice-creating process, in which people and ideas change as the conversation unfolds and new possibilities emerge that were not present before. As a result, it can serve us well in a situation where we want to increase the level of collective intelligence. In dynamic facilitation, the facilitator does not try to hold a group to a pre-established agenda. In fact, the only agenda are the thoughts and feelings of participants as they emerge in the process. However, the facilitator works very actively to draw out each person's perspective, including the solutions that each person imagines might be the best course of action. The facilitator actively protects each person's contribution by listening deeply to it, reflecting it, and recording it on chart paper where the whole group can see it. Whenever a conflict emerges, the facilitator expands the space to make room for the full range of divergence present in the group. Instead of trying to reconcile differences, the facilitator simply acknowledges and makes room for the various perspectives, solutions, concerns, questions, etc. that are offered by the participants. And with that, I give you my interview with Rosa Zubizarreta on dynamic facilitation. I'll see you on the other side.
Maybe just a general overview of what dynamic facilitation is would be helpful. I haven't actually been involved personally with dynamic facilitation yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that'll change in the future. So,
well, I just want to start by thanking you because you've invited me to talk about something that I am so passionate about and that means so much to me and it's so close to my heart. The reason I'm so excited about facilitation, and I want to tell you a little bit about why I'm so excited about it before I tell you more about, like, what it is and how it works and all that.
Okay. Yeah, definitely.
Is because, I guess I'd like to start with a short story. I was invited by my friend Tom Attlee to a dynamic facilitation workshop in the spring of 2000. He'd actually invited me to one in the fall of 1999, and I wasn't able to go. But then he invited me again. And I had no idea what it was, and I was a little reluctant at first just because I was busy and there were a lot of different things going on, and facilitation didn't sound so intriguing. Excuse me. It didn't sound so intriguing to me because often people talk about facilitation as herding cats, and so, you know, the thought of kind of trying to really work hard to get everybody to stay on topic and stay within the boxes and I'm a little bit more of a free-spirited and creative person, and I thought, well, this will be interesting, but I wasn't excited about it. What happened when I arrived at the workshop, and the main reason I went is that my friend Tom had invited a group of very interesting people to accompany him on this exploration of his, and so and I have a great deal of respect for him, and so I really wanted to kind of, you know, meet his new friends since he'd moved up to Eugene, Oregon, and just kind of, it was an act of faith. I said, okay, if Tom,
yeah, well,
and
this is Tom Attlee,
yeah,
from the Co-Intelligence Institute.
Yes,
yeah, it's definitely a name for people to know.
Yeah, so when we arrived there, Tom had brought a number of friends of his who were social change activists that he had met around the organizing for the Seattle WTO protests. And so these were people who were very progressive, activist, committed. And that was half of the folks who were at this workshop. And the other half of the folks who were there were Jim's regular clientele of business people and government folks who were taking a workshop on facilitation, specifically dynamic facilitation. And so it was a very interesting mix of people. And within the, you know, by the afternoon of the first day, the kind of mutual respect and curiosity that was taking place in that room was absolutely fascinating to me. I was very, very deeply moved because it felt to me like this was way beyond facilitation. This was conflict resolution. This was, it was really magic that was happening in that room. So I was hooked, and that's what's so inspiring to me. That's one of the things that's so inspiring to me about it is the ability of bringing together people with diversely perspectives, backgrounds, beliefs, positions, ways of looking at the world, and bringing them together in a creative container where all of that difference starts to turn into potential for creating a greater whole with all these various perspectives, and it a lot of energy. And so that's what's so fascinating to me about it.
Yeah, that's the overall impression I got looking into dynamic facilitation, is that it's like, okay, I'm going to take this group of people, diverse people that have some sort of issue or problem or whatever, and we're going to put them all together and find the hidden solution that works for everybody, which sounds like utopian-ish, you know,
yeah.
Kind of unrealistic, maybe.
Yeah, good. So I'm really glad you're surfacing your concerns about it, because that's really, really important. And in fact, that's one of the things that we do in the process, is we create a space where we're not just limited to, you know, some people have experience with brainstorming where and brainstorming is a very, you know, good and powerful technique in its own right, but we're talking about mm-hmm. something different here. But in brainstorming, people are encouraged to not criticize one another's ideas and to just kind of suspend disbelief and just put everything out there. And that's all very useful in the process of brainstorming. But in dynamic facilitation, we do something different, which is that we really create a space where we welcome people's concerns, yet in a safe way that isn't going to trample on other people's creativity. And so people's concerns and doubts and fears and, well, that would never work because of this, are actually a real important ingredient in the process.
You're trying to create this sort of safe environment for people to air their dirty laundry or whatever it is. Do you run into, in like a work setting, where employees might feel a little intimidated having their managers around and bringing up certain issues? I know there's always those kind of conflicts and tensions at the workplace. How does dynamic
right.
facilitation kind of, you know, sidestep that?
Right. That's a really important question. We don't want to nudge anyone to share more personal information than they're comfortable with sharing, and that can really be an issue in a work setting. And this is not about some kind of encounter group where everyone, you know, you use the phrase shares their dirty laundry or like that. We really want to respect people's privacy and to whatever degree they want to participate in the process. But primarily I want to say here that the process isn't so much about people's personal issues. The process really is about how do we create something together? And so in the process of creating something together, often a lot of personal change happens. So it's kind of like the difference between something that's therapy and something that's therapeutic. You know, we're not therapy. We're not going in and asking people to delve into their psyches. But the process itself, it's very interesting that people often find it very therapeutic, because we're creating a space where people are welcome to share whatever they feel comfortable sharing, but also where we're really encouraging people to do is to create a safe space for their creativity, for their sense of what is really possible, what they would really like, for their dreams of what really could be. And that is an incredibly healing and transformative process.
Yeah, that seems to be something also that's new to people. That's not very much a popular idea yet, you know, this idea of of finding a way for people to actually kind of get what they want, you know, but without
Yeah, because, you know, if I can offer a contrast between traditional forms of facilitation and dynamic facilitation, we're really not about compromise and settling for something that everybody can live with. We're really into and this is where it can sound pie in the sky, to kind of get back to your concern earlier. You know, people say, there's no way you can there's no way that you can come up with a situation where people don't need to compromise. See, what happens is that people are transformed in the process of what we're doing is we're creating a larger shared reality. We're expanding the size of the pie. So if you have the same pie that you're trying to cut up, of course there's a limited number of solutions to how do we slice up this small pie. And as long as we have that small pie, then people are going to need to compromise. And I'm not putting down compromise. A lot of times people have very positive intentions and saying, well, I'm gonna settle for less than what I really want here, so that somebody else can have something. And that's fine. However, when we start to really bring creativity into the equation and the pie starts to expand, and also as the pie expands, it expands not just because it's getting bigger, but it expands because we're really listening deeply to each person's perspective. So we're getting, all of a sudden, it isn't just a pie, it's a really intricate understanding of what this whole is that we all are playing a part in, with all the different perspectives and roles and functions that each person is bringing to it. And that larger shared understanding is infused with creative energy of what we can all create when we're working together. Then that's how we come up with things that everyone's excited about, because there are new possibilities in the room, which brings me to the word choice creating that is so important to Jim Roth, the founder of Dynamic Facilitation, because what we're doing is we're creating new choices that didn't exist before.
Yeah, see, I'm liking everything you're saying right here. it's definitely something I'm very much interested in, and it calls to mind the phrase collective genius that I've heard thrown around here and there as well. Before I get into any of that or any other avenues we could go, maybe you could sort of take our listeners through what it would be like to actually be a part of one of these facilitation processes.
Oh,
I think that would
sure.
really help people to kind of, you know, to somewhat experience it a bit.
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Well, I mean, when I do this, and we all do this, you know, in our own ways a little bit, because this is really because we are tapping creativity. So when people learn this, we want them to experiment and be creative and like that. So the way that I do it whenever possible is I begin by having individual conversations with the people who are going to be at the meeting. Isn't always possible. You don't have to do it this way. But I want people to feel as comfortable as possible when they walk into the room, and we're going to be doing this process that is kind of nonlinear. You know, we don't just focus on a single topic at a time, and so sometimes people can, you know, it's like when you first go out on a ship or on a boat or something, you know, and it's rocking in the water and it takes you a while to get your sea legs. So I want people to feel as comfortable as possible coming into the space. So I really like to explain to them a little bit of what it's going to be like. And so I start by saying, you know, this is a creative process, and it's a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle. When you're working on a jigsaw puzzle, especially those big 500-piece puzzles, you know, that sometimes people work on their kitchen table, there's not a particular order to it, in the sense that you might pick up a piece of the jigsaw puzzle and it might feel like, oh, this is a little piece of sky because it's blue, so it's going to go somewhere up here, and it might be a border piece, so you find where that goes. And then the next piece you pick on might be a little bit of the trees, you know, and so, okay, so it might go, you know. So, but the more pieces you put in, the more the pattern emerges. But so it's not like it's random, because there's a pattern that's emerging, but the order of the pieces, it's not like you're going to say, well, let's do all of the sky first and then let's do all of the trees first. You're kind of jumping around a little bit depending on what's coming up next. So that's the way in which it can feel initially like we're kind of jumping around all over, but I like to let people know that before we start. And I also like to give them the confidence that the more pieces we put up there, the more the whole picture is going to start to make sense. So if it feels a little bit like overwhelming at times or whatever, just hang in there. The other thing I like to say to people before they even come into the process is that we really, 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 really deeply want to hear from each person. And especially if you feel like you're out in left field because everybody's talking about this over here, but nobody's talked about this thing that to you seems like really important, and you're just even wondering if you're in the right meeting, that's especially the time when what you're thinking and feeling is going to be particularly useful to the group. So one of the guidelines, or you know, that I invite people to do, not rules, but you know, the like kind of guiding principles of the process, is please don't stifle yourself. I don't know how old your listeners are, but some of us that are a little older here, there's a TV show, Archie Bunker, where about this prejudiced guy who had this wife, Edith, and he used to always say to her, Edith, stifle yourself, when he didn't want to hear what she had to say.
Yeah.
So one of her guidelines is please don't stifle yourself. Especially if you feel like you have a perspective that somehow isn't even on people's maps right now. So then the other thing that I say to people before they're going to come into a meeting is that, and actually I don't do a lot of talking to them beforehand. I mean, I say these things often at the end, but I really start out by asking them questions. You know, what do you feel is most important for us to be talking about at this meeting? And then I listen to whatever they have to say. And I might ask them, what do you think is working well in this organization or in this group or in this, you know, community? And what do you think are some of the issues that are problems or challenges? And then what are your solutions? Like, if it were up to you, you know, I'm sure that you really care about, because most people really do. We start out with the assumption that people really care about what's going on at their workplace or what's going on at their school or what's going on in their community. And so when you're, you know, restless and thinking about this and not able to sleep at night because you're thinking about, you know, this problem and what should be done about it, if it were up to you, what do you think would be helpful? What do you think the answer would be? What do you think the solution would be? And one-on-one, it's usually a little easier for people to venture forth, you know, because we're all amazing problem solvers. You know, we're all these amazing beings whose minds are continuously working to recognize patterns and come up with new patterns. And human beings are incredibly creative and powerful. That's another of the basic assumptions of this method. And so people are continuously trying to figure things out. I mean, you think about a baby who, you know, learns how to speak in a couple of years and learns the whole culture that they grow up in. It's like they're continuously taking in all this information and trying to have it make sense, you know, and coming up with new ideas. So people are continuously kind of in the back of their minds somewhere mulling over, you know, what would help in this kind of situation. But usually they don't get asked in that really intense, I really want to hear what your idea would be. Because one of the things that we find is that when people are in groups, you know, in traditional forms of facilitation, often people say, well, the biggest problem is how do you control people who want to talk too much, right? Because some people want to go on, and how do you keep them from dominating the conversation and like that? And it's interesting because of the framework that we create in dynamic facilitation, where we're inviting people to really share what their solution would be, it's almost like we have the opposite problem. You know, people get really shy. It's like, oh, well, you know, they might say a little sentence or two and then, you know, but I don't want to talk too much. I don't want to dominate the conversation. Just go on to somebody else, you know, because we're really inviting people to share their creative input. And creativity is something that we all tend to feel a little shy about, because this is our idea and it's new. And what if other people disagree? And what if other people shut it down and stomp all over it and say, oh, well, that would never work because of this or this or that? You know, it's a tender place. Creativity tends to be a pretty tender place.
Yeah, I was going to say vulnerable, but yeah.
Yeah. So one-on-one, when I'm working with people before the meeting, it's a little safer for them to begin to tell me their little dream or vision or hope about what might help the situation. And then when they finish saying that to me, what I say is, oh, would you be willing to share that in the group? And one of the things I explain to them is that other people may have different ideas, and I'm going to be inviting everybody to share their ideas. But in order to protect that little green shoot of creativity, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be asking people, not just asking them, but I'm going to actually be physically making sure that people aren't interrupting, aren't cutting each other off. Because if I'm listening to somebody and somebody else starts to say, well, that would never work because I'm going to go right in between those two people and I'm going to say to that other person, I really want to hear your concerns about why this might not work, but I need you to wait for a moment because I can't listen to two people at the same time and I'm still over here, so I'll get right back to you. And then I go back to the person who is having the creative idea, and I say, okay, so you were saying that you think that if we did this, and then we did that, and then I'm taking notes the whole time, big notes on chart paper. Mm-hmm. I want to hear the rest of your idea. Now, what would it look like? And so I am reengaging in that one-on-one with them to really create a safe space for bringing out that idea. And I'm listening to the possibility in their idea, and I'm appreciating their idea. Now, it's not going to be the final idea. At the end of the day, everybody's going to have put their best creative ideas out there, and the final idea might end up being something really different that the group ends up coming up with. But we really have to value and treasure these initial small steps,
mm-hmm.
because they contain within them the seed of how that person is looking at the world. And even if that idea ends up not being the final idea, it might spark somebody else's next idea about, well, you know, that might not work quite that way, but what if we changed it and built on it and came up with this other way? You know, so Jim, in his workshops, likes to, when he's teaching people this method, likes to talk about, you know, the Wright brothers and Kitty Hawk, and how in order to come up with an airplane, they had to come up with, you know, 1,000 different things that didn't work in order to come up with something that did. But we really have to create a safe space for people's initial creative efforts in order to get to that, you know, final thing that everybody's, like, totally excited about.
How's it go? Hum it.
Hey, I know how it goes something like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, this is it. Oh, this is like the lounge version. All right. Certain shade of green, right? All right.
A certain shade of green. Tell me, is that what you need? All stars around, they say move ahead. Could someone please explain to me your ever-present lack of speed? Are your muscles bound by ropes? Or do crutches cloud your day? My sources say the road is clear and street signs point the way. You're gonna stand around till 2012 AD. What are you waiting for? A certain shade of green. I think I grew a gray watching you procrastinate. What are you waiting for? A certain shade of green.
Sorry, Mike. I love you.
Ha. Would a red sun in invitation. Sun choose now or lose it. Oh. Some fatal hesitation, jazz. Oh, and flame can make you stall. You've been raised in limitation, but that glove never fit quite right. The time has passed of all hand-me-downs. Choose a new, please evolve, take life.
Thank you, Vegas.
You're gonna stand around till 2012 AD. What are you waiting for? A certain shade of green. I think I grew a gray watching you procrastinate.
You are listening to the Next Step Podcast, searching for the future in the world we find ourselves in today.
You know, a thousand different things that didn't work in order to come up with something that did. But we really have to create a safe space for people's initial creative efforts in order to get to that, you know, final thing that everybody's like totally excited about.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key things that really interested me about this, and what I see is a very important thing, is that idea that you do create that safe space for people's creativity, because of that fact that so many people are, I wouldn't say meek, but, you know, they're more shy than they should be, maybe. And but when you allow that space for people to kind of express themselves and let these little tender, you know, vulnerable things out, I think that's a really powerful thing, because that adds to the whole group dynamic, like what you're talking about. And then also, I think that has a lot of resonance for the person as far as empowering them. You know, mm-hmm. they actually feel like, well, yes, I am a part of this. You know, yeah. I am making a difference here.
Yeah.
And that's something that, to me, I see so much of, is people are disempowered and just they're just not living their full, you know, creative potential. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to see. And so that was one of the things that really stuck out for me when I was researching dynamic facilitation, was this idea of, you know, even the smallest person in the room with the smallest, you know, meagerest ideas still matters just as much as the person who's shouting and has all these great ideas and whatnot. So
absolutely. It's often the people who are the quietest that when they finally feel safe enough to say their piece, it's like everybody goes, oh, wow. You know? They've been sitting there observing the whole thing and not, you know, kind of sharing their perspective. And usually, often that really leads to a breakthrough, because it's a real important missing piece of the puzzle. Absolutely. Mm. So empowerment. Can I say something about that? Because you used that word, and that's,
yeah, yeah. Take the conversation any direction that you want. I trust your judgment.
Well, empowerment is, you know, it's often this buzzword. You know, we want to really empower people, but often it's, you know, people get really cynical about it, because sometimes in workplaces, it's like managers kind of want the appearance without the substance sometimes. You know, they want,
yeah,
like everyone mm-hmm. to walk around and look and feel empowered, but they don't really want to share the power or whatever.
So, just pretend everyone.
Yeah. So I just want to, you know, acknowledge that happens way too often. But what I wanted to mention about, I know you're going to do another one of these with Jim on, or Deanna on the Wisdom Council and all that, so I don't want to say too much about that. But just as a little preview, I want to say that I've gone back to Jim's seminars on dynamic facilitation repeatedly. I mean, I started out when I took my first one, I wanted to learn more about this, and so I went back for another one as soon as I could. And then afterwards, I've gone back over the years to just observe the whole process of how he teaches them, because I've become a teacher of dynamic facilitation myself, and then also to assist in the teaching process, to co-teach the work with them and like that. But there's this one particular seminar that really stands out in my mind, because some ladies in the seminar had, they were government employees who were for the Washington State, I'm not sure if it was the Forest Service or Agriculture Department. I think it might have been the Department of Agriculture. Anyway, I'm, but don't quote me on that. I'm not exactly sure I don't recall exactly the division that they were working for, but their department had just engaged in this Wisdom Council process. And a Wisdom Council is a large system change effort where what you do is you bring together it's like a microcosm of the employees in the division, or it could be a microcosm of the people in your community or like that. But the point is, it's a small group, but it's chosen at random so that you could have, you know, person who works as a janitor in there, or you could have the person who works as a CEO in there. It's random. So you end up with a very mixed group of people from all levels of the organization or the community. And then these folks spend usually up to 2.5 days in a dynamically facilitated process. So they're exploring in a very creative, open-ended way what would make their organization better or what would make their community better. And so they get to speak about the challenges and the problems and the strengths and, you know, basically whatever they want to in whatever order they want to, because it's a very creative process. And by the end of the day, they come out with this shared understanding of what they see as the next steps for moving forward. And it's not like a set of rules or guidelines, but it's more like almost like a State of the Union address, except that it's not put forward by the president. It's put forward by this microcosm council that has got together to really deeply reflect on what's going on with the whole and what needs to happen. So it has more of a moral force than any kind of a legal power. So this government organization had just created a wisdom council process. They had chosen these folks at random, and they had brought in a dynamic facilitator to, and it actually wasn't Jim, it was one of their own folks who had taken the dynamic facilitation training. And these folks had spent these 2 days looking at their organization. And these two women had been part of the Wisdom Council. They had been chosen at random, and they had spent 2 days in this process, and they were so jazzed by the process that they were telling us, because at the beginning of the workshop, everybody says, well, why did you come here to take this dynamic facilitation workshop? And so they were introducing themselves, and they said, well, we were part of this Wisdom Council, and it was a really amazing process, and so we wanted to learn more about it, so this is why we're here. So I was very curious, because I had never met anybody before who had participated in one of these Wisdom Council processes. It's something that Jim has done in a number of different places, but I had never had the opportunity to actually be part of one or meet somebody who had. So I said, excuse me, can I ask you a couple questions about this? And they said, oh, sure. And I said, well, what was so exciting about this? Or what, you know, and they just started to talk a little bit about what it had meant to them. And they started to talk about how they were so excited by it. And again, we come back to the word empowerment, that they had started meeting on their lunchtime an hour a week to keep talking about what they could do to help make their organization better, more effective, et cetera, et cetera. And there were two people in the room who were mid-level managers in the same organization. They had not been part of the Wisdom Council. They were just being sent there because this whole organization was committed to including more dynamic facilitation as part of their work. And so they're sitting there listening to these ladies going, oh my goodness, that must have been some kind of meeting that you were wanting to, of your own time without getting paid, continue to meet to talk about the stuff that you were talking about. And the women looked at him and they said, you don't understand. We did not want those 2 days to end. And the gentlemen looked back at them and were going, that was not a meeting. I mean, that was something else, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But so that is just a story. I remember it so vividly, how moved I was to hear about these women's excitement about this process that they had been part of.
Yeah, that is really inspiring. And it again brings into that, you know, like the idea of empowerment. And I think people are so detached, especially on, you know, maybe in the community and national levels, where they're so detached from their governments. And it's like people just, I'm not important, or, you know, I can't get an idea across. But when you put people in this sort of situation where what they say have to say matters, and they become a part of this, you know, creation process, then, I mean, there's just nothing more powerful than that, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really, people talk about we create reality, you know, and, you know, maybe there's something to that. But if anything, I think this would have something to do with that, you know, these conversations we can have and these creative outlets and, you know, putting it all together and making something new and you know, otherwise unseen before.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the thing about we create reality, it's like, there's our individual stories, but there's also the shared cultural stories that we're all a part of. So it can be very disempowering to people to feel like in your own personal life, you might have gone through all these changes and transformations and be looking at the world in a different way. But when you go to work, or when you're part of the government, or when you're a citizen participating in government, and government is doing things in kind of very old ways that aren't working very much, and you know, if you want to participate in giving your input, the old traditional kind of a model is there's a public hearing and everybody gets to say their thing for 2 minutes, but nobody's responding. It doesn't really, it's like, where did it go? You know, you just stand up there and you say your piece, and yeah, you got to say your piece. But so in this process, it's like we are creating a shared reality. And that's a very powerful thing. It's a very powerful thing to create our own individual realities in our own lives, you know, to like really work on our own ways of thinking and create the kind of life we want for ourselves individually. But it's that much more powerful to create the life that we want for ourselves together by participating in a process where we really tap into our creativity in a shared context with other people.
Yeah, that's great. And to me, it seems like that's almost sort of like the new model of for how we need to behave together in order to sort of push past a lot of these problems we've created for ourselves is sharing visions and co-creating new realities to, steer the course.
Mm-hmm. And part of that new way that we need to be able to share those visions, and this gets to that little point about what happens when it looks like our visions are colliding.
Mm.
You know, what happens when one person is sharing their vision and then another person is sharing their vision and it looks like these visions are totally opposed?
Yeah.
Right? So that's the place where, my goal is I want everybody to learn how to do this, because I think this is like kind of like first aid, you know, it's like everybody should know how to do Heimlich maneuver. If somebody has something stuck in their throat, you want to clear the airways. Well, if you have a little group or a big group that's stuck, where creativity isn't able to come in because it's all of a sudden there's this conflict, there's this like stuck energy, everybody can learn these basic tools of how do you help create more space so that each perspective can be heard, and all of a sudden we realize that it appeared on one surface level to be this total contradiction, jut and button heads, but when we create a space to listen more deeply to each perspective, all of a sudden, as I was saying before about the pie growing bigger, all of a sudden it's like our shared map grows bigger and we begin to understand how from one perspective it looks like this and from another perspective it looks like that, and both of these pieces have something valuable to contribute to the whole. And my belief is we all need to be able to learn to do that.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, definitely. And I wish we could take what you just said and put into a pill form and kind of distribute it to the people. Because I see so many, you know, polarities and differences growing stronger and stronger,
right,
you know, in our culture. At the same time, I see a lot of people who are getting it, though, and bridging the gap as
absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely. 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 Well, you know, one of the things Jim loves to say is that, you know, he didn't invent choice creating. Choice creating is something that happens naturally whenever we're in a really good conversation where we're trying to work on something, and for whatever reason, we're able to have the spaciousness and have the time and have the interest and curiosity to really value each perspective and find a way through it, beyond it, to something bigger and better than any of us could have created on our own. And we've all had that experience, because it's what happens when we are able to take the time and energy to listen to each perspective, and you know, reality just kind of begins to expand. The issue is, how do we reliably evoke choice creating? And so all that dynamic facilitation is some basic principles for how we can reliably evoke that kind of experience.
Okay. Yeah, now that makes perfect sense now, and kind of wraps the whole thing up in my head, mm-hmm. that basically it's all about choice creation at the core,
mm-hmm.
and then he's just developed the model that mm-hmm. enables that. And what's the success rate? That's one thing that I really got to know. When you go to these, I don't know how many you've done, but do you get a lot of people that just aren't satisfied with the process and really didn't get anything out of it, or do you actually see the opposite? Do you see, like, you know, across the board, people are engaged and enjoying what's happening?
Well, okay, so I need to start a little bit by saying it is a process, and so that means that it's not something that at every single moment is feeling good to every single person in the room, right? Mm. And that's one of the things I need to talk with people ahead of time about and say, you know, by the end of this process, and so what I like to, when I work with organizations, what I like to do is I like to plan enough time, usually a series of four meetings. If it's a really big, thorny issue that there's a lot of people with a lot of different perspectives on that they've been struggling with for some time, I really need to help them resist, and me, I need to resist the, it's like everybody wants a magic pill, you know, and it's like, okay, so we'll have one meeting and we'll, you know, magically solve everything and everybody will walk out happy. And I'm like, you know, that's, I have a very powerful process. I don't have a magic wand, you know, so it's not going to be a, we're going to just meet one time and kumbaya for forever. So the process is, let's commit to a series of four meetings. And I start out by meeting people individually, you know, to introduce the process to them. And during those four meetings, we listen to each person's perspective. I'm taking notes, you know, chart paper, inviting people into the creative space and like that. And magic happens, you know. And sometimes it doesn't even take four meetings. Sometimes it takes two meetings and like that. So the thing is, about creativity, and this is kind of the caveat here, it's like, say you have a really good day and say you are absolutely successful at accomplishing everything on your to-do list. Does that mean you're not going to have a to-do list tomorrow? I'm asking you that.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, you're going to have a to-do list tomorrow.
Right. So, you know, we can have a great meeting and people can have a really wonderful experience and we can have a significant breakthrough in terms of the challenge that they were working on. But say the challenge that they were working on was, you know, how do we design a new computer system that really meets everybody's needs and is really, you know, easy to implement and it's a lot better than the one we have now. Okay, so say we figure out how to do that. Does that mean everybody can go home for the rest of the year? You know, no. It's like the kind of the basic law of life is like, it's like when we solve one set of challenges, we get to work on the next one. So now it's like, okay, so now we have this new computer system and we have all this information. And so now how do we, you know, how do we increase our advertising so that we now start to have more customers? And then when we do that, then how do we add on a new product? It's like life is continuously growing and evolving. So, yes, we can have incredible success at breaking through whatever stuck issue is happening right now, and we will still continue to have a new creative challenge. So often what happens in a meeting, let me bring this back to what you were asking about how people are feeling in a meeting. Oftentimes, we might have worked through the initial challenge that they came in for, and then somebody says, well, what are we going to do about this other thing? And we're like, okay, well, let's talk about that, and you know, we start talking about that, and then they work through that, and then somebody says, well, okay, so now that we figured that out, well, what about this other thing? And how, you know, so it's like, so I have to stop them at some point and say, you guys have been doing really amazing work here. When you came in, you were trying to figure out what you were going to do about A, and then it seemed like that got pretty clear, and then you decided you wanted to work on B, and so now you've made a lot of progress on that, and then you started working on this, you know, next problem, and it's time to end the meeting, you know, and you're still working, but you're not working on the same problem that you were working when you came in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of paradoxical that, yes, it's very successful, and people never run out of creative challenges that they want to tackle. So I don't know if that answers your question, but.
Yeah. It does. And also brings in this idea that it's more than just that session that they're engaged in. It's the dynamic facilitation. It almost seems like just kind of gives them the initial push in a right direction, you know, towards learning how to, you know, create choices together and come to new ideas, you know, and that's something that they can take with them
mm-hmm.
into the future.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just the here, come to this workshop and see what happens kind of deal. It's,
right.
It's more than that.
I mean, ideally we want to be, so maybe as a last thing here, that might explain also a little bit, like during a choice creating session, initially, as a facilitator, we're very active. We're listening to each person deeply. There's a lot of kind of oftentimes initial kind of button heads, and so we're stepping in and creating space to make sure that each perspective can be heard and like that. After a while, once the group enters this zone of choice creating where they're becoming excited about all the various possibilities, and if somebody makes a comment that initially they don't understand at first, instead of getting defensive about it, they start to get really curious and say, huh, tell me more about that, you know, which is what I'm doing as a facilitator, but now the group folks are starting to do that. At that point, I tend to step back a lot. I mean, I'm still taking notes of everything that everyone is saying, because one big difference, like in a lot of traditional meetings, people take notes of the points of agreement. We're not just taking notes of the points of agreement. We're harvesting every single contribution that each person is saying. So in one way, it's a lot of work up there. But at the same time, we end up with a lot of treasure, because we're really capturing all the various perspectives that are being shared. So I'm still writing in the background, but it's like the group is running itself. And then at some point, maybe they start to work on some thorny issue again, and somebody starts to, you know, butt heads with somebody else, and I'll step right back in and say, okay, there's two very important things here, and I really want to hear both of them and make enough room. And so I kind of step back into the group, open up some more space, and then the group gets going on a different level, and then I can step back and take some notes. So kind of in a similar way to that, when I'm working with an organization, they might be stuck on a particular issue, and they might bring me in to help them break through that. Then after that, they're fine, and, you know, they can keep going. And then, you know, maybe a few months after or 6 months later or whatever, there's some big thorny issue that they're saying, oh, wait, we really need you to come and hear the various different people in the different perspectives here, so that we don't get stuck in conflict, and instead we can use this as an opportunity to get creative. And what I really want to be doing is to be training their own people so that they have that capacity internally.
Yeah, definitely spreading the seed.
My ultimate vision is that, because what I'm most interested in taking this work to is community organizations and nonprofit organizations and social change organizations and all those kinds of groups. And ideally, my vision is that, see, sometimes it's really helpful to have somebody who can come in from the outside, but that doesn't need to be a paid consultant. That can be, you know, your partner organization next door who also knows how to do dynamic facilitation. And so when your group is stuck, you can say, hey, you know, can you come over and hold some space for us? And then when their group is stuck, a person from your group can go and hold some space for them. The reason why sometimes it can be so helpful to have somebody from outside your group come in is that when you're really, really stuck, each person in your group has a real key piece of the puzzle. And so if you take one person from inside your group and have that person be in the role of holding space, it can be hard for that person to be facilitating, but also, you know, taking off their hat to kind of offer their own perspective.
Right.
So that's why it can be so helpful when it's a really big issue, if you can have somebody from the outside, because then that way everybody in the organization gets to participate in terms of bringing their own key piece of the puzzle in. But that doesn't mean that we have to depend on, you know, highly paid outside consultants, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It can be a peer exchange process where we all know how to hold space for each other. So, you know, again, if I'm, you know, a local community block group, I can have somebody from the next block over come over and help us through a particularly challenging spot, and in turn I can do the same for them.
Yeah, it's not a top-down model. It's definitely, it's more what I like to call a bottom-and-out model. Mm-hmm. it's not bottom-up model, because that just creates another pyramid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's a good place to leave off, Rosa.
Maybe if you
want to give our listeners some websites and anything else that you're working on right now that might be of interest.
The website is www.dynamicfacilitation.com. That's kind of our mothership. That's the website for Jim Ruff and Associates. That's one of the websites. And then there's also the Center for Wise Democracy, and that's focusing on taking dynamic facilitation into the nonprofit world, and specifically the Wisdom Council process. Mm-hmm. And I will pull that up in a moment. And then the diapraxis.com that you were mentioning initially is my website, where I have the link to the Dynamic Facilitation Manual in English and in Spanish. What I wanted to say about that is that we have just recently revised the manual and added a bunch of new material to that, and we don't have that up yet, but keep checking in. We also have a email list for people who are interested in dynamic facilitation that you can access through the dynamicfacilitation.com website. And if you get on that list, we are planning to send out information on a link to the new version of the manual once we have that online. But in the meantime, we have our classic version that's available. So I just really want to encourage people. When I wrote the manual, I wrote it in a way so that people would ideally be able to just read the manual and go out and try it. I've really tried to, there's no trade secrets here. It's all open source shareware. Tried to make it as complete as possible. So the link for the Center for Wise Democracy is www.wisedemocracy.org. And so those are the three main websites at the moment.
Excellent. Well, Rosa Zubizarreta, am I saying that correctly?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I want to thank you for coming on the show, and hope to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you so much, Jared. This has been a really, as I said, I just get so excited about the possibility of sharing this. So thank you so much.
Yeah, this is good stuff, and I definitely need people with passion on this. So
thanks again.
I should just give up, or just stop trying. But life is so uncertain, so short. I've got to keep on searching, and wherever it takes me.
A big thank you to Rosa Zubizarreta. I highly enjoyed that, and she felt that she was talking a bit much, and I told her, hey, I need people with passion and something to say for the show, and she definitely fit the bill. So I thank her for that, and you guys do check out the website she mentioned, especially if you're really turned on by the idea of maybe getting involved in dynamic facilitation yourself. Start with the Diapraxis website under the resources section, and that's, again, where you'll find the manual for dynamic facilitation freely available, and you can get to reading that right away. And then later on, check out Jim Ruff and Associates and see if maybe there will be some training sessions going on in your area or anything else you might be able to get involved in. So yeah, check out those websites. I hope there is a sort of a new picture beginning to develop in your mind of a new way of interacting in a group setting. You know, that doesn't lead to the old groupthink that doesn't lead to the herd mentality, you know, and that truly takes into account every voice, every single voice, none missing. Because that is something we don't have and we don't experience often, if at all, in this American culture, in Western culture, I should say. It's a whole paradigm shift. That's the way I see it. It's a completely different step into a new field of dealing with people and interacting in a group setting. It's just beyond anything else that is typically thought of and found out there in the world. And so I just, you know, I encourage you to even listen to this interview again, do some reading, do some research, you know, maybe buy one of their books and just kind of jump into this idea, like she said, of you know, in a first aid kit, you're going to have all the things you need to heal somebody physically. But in the social sense, we have no first aid kit. When we're in a social environment and we need some big problems to be solved, you know, people have more of the tendency to just kind of shut down and freak out almost and sort of resort to a disempowered state. And that's the other key that I see in this whole field of social process technologies, bringing individuals together and showing them the empowerment that they never knew they had or that they miss because they had it once. You know, letting people know, hey, you know what, we don't have to wait for the guys in Washington to get things done. We can solve our problems on our own and come up with some of our own answers, some of our own conclusions. Your voice counts. My voice matters. Everybody's voice will be heard and included. And then we will all see what's there. It's a whole new creation. It's almost we have to think of these group encounters as its own metaphorically alive being. You know, we're creating an active, creative system. So, I mean, this is like a quantum jump from the old Robert's rules and just formal engagements we have for quote-unquote decision-making and, you know, the old way of facilitation. So hopefully I'm making sense and all of this is starting to ignite little fires in your mind and, you know, you find yourself saying, oh yeah, 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 that's it right there. Because that's how I've been along this little journey. It's almost like I find things and I'm recognizing parts of myself that I couldn't voice before. Intuitions and feelings I've had that, you know, I couldn't really even consciously apprehend and understand until I encountered certain material. And dynamic facilitation work is certainly one of those things in terms of my ideas for empowering people and making decisions on the community level. So, you know, all these things work together, and we just gotta figure out the ways and combinations in which they'll best work. There are a few other things that I wanted to include on the end of this episode, but in the interest of keeping the entire show closer to an hour than not, I'm just going to skip all that for now, and instead I'm going to leave you with a short quote from the book The Ascent of Humanity by author Charles Eisenstein. And Charles writes, "Collectively, we humans have experienced only the beginnings of the birth pangs that will propel us into the new world we have glimpsed. We are still able to resist, still able to deceive ourselves into thinking that we can expropriate from nature endlessly, that nature has infinite wealth for our taking and infinite capacity for our waste. This illusion is disintegrating rapidly, and the disintegration will accelerate dramatically in our lifetimes. The crises rapidly converging on our species are nothing less than the uterine contractions that will propel us into a new way of being." Hopefully you find in the information that we present here at the Next Step podcast some little inklings and intuitions and shining jewels of the new way of being that Charles Eisenstein talks about. I'll see you guys next time. Until then, take care of yourself and seek with courage.